Anyway, if you have a check you would like to give it to the general fund with the memo for Liberia, and we will try to see that it gets there. And accept the thanks, gratitude that I received this morning from them. Over the years, our family has made different trips to Colorado. Colorado is not so far from here. The mountains are out there, often when it's hot and dry, and we're in the doldrums of summer. Seems like those mountains of Colorado call. We enjoy to go camping out there. We take a tent along and we go camping somewhere in a national forest. Doesn't seem like we get to go very often, maybe once every 4 years or something like that. But it's an enjoyable time. And it seems that when we get there, we don't get to stay very long because we just have too many things to do and we can't really enjoy an extended period of time. So we had been talking about this a little this summer. Would there be a chance that we could go to Colorado? And there was some interest, especially on certain quarters, to see this come to fruition, come to pass, and not just a whole lot of resistance. We found out then that Judy's oldest brother, Tim, and his wife were going to be spending some time in there, and they too would have had interest in going to Colorado. So that was kind of the impetus we needed, and it kind of threw the last of the plans together. And it was pretty hurriedly that the plans came together finally for us to go. This would have been about 2 weeks ago now. They came in, I think, on the 31st of July, and we were making some plans over the supper table, and we'll say, do we want to go to Colorado tomorrow morning? Do we, you know, what should we do? And yeah, they're game, and so, and off we went. About 6 o'clock the next morning, we left. You know, we've taken other trips. You've taken trips. As people, we travel a lot. I think it's Vincent back here that says that, what is it? Join the Mennonites and see the world. A play on the join the Marines and see the world, I think. But anyway, that just came to me now here. Okay. But all of us are participating in another kind of journey. It's another kind of trip. The journey to Colorado was a nice little trip. It was very short. We didn't really have a schedule that had to be made. We had some things that we wanted to see happen, and we played those things together to make them happen, or tried to make them happen. But if something would have come up, we could have turned around and come back home. There was a lot of things about the trip to Colorado that weren't really here nor there. You know, it fell in place, it came together, that was fine. But the trip I want to talk about today is a different kind of trip altogether. The details of this journey are very, very important. For this journey to be successful, we need to have a goal, and it needs to be the right goal. Can you read that back there? Okay. This journey of life, we need to have a goal, and it needs to be the right goal. In our trip to Colorado, there were several things that we wanted to see happen. We wanted to get to a certain campground, one that we had stayed at several times before, and this was about 500 miles from here, and we really wanted to get a campsite at that place, but we realized this was busy season, it's still school vacation, the people that are cramming to get things in before the before school starts would likely be there. There was just a bunch of things that were kind of conspiring against us. Well, that was the main one, actually. We wanted a camping spot, and we wanted to be at this specific place. We had a goal. That was our goal. And so we wanted to see that would happen. Someone has said about life, if we have no goals, you'll hit them every time. Or if you have no goal, you'll hit it every time. The motivational speakers, they would say we should be setting goals. I remember sitting in a meeting where there was a multi-level marketing scheme or system that was being promoted. You were encouraged to set a goal or to write something down, you know, and then the facilitators would be there to help you be able to find a path to make that dream a reality. Others would encourage us to think about how we would want our obituary to read, maybe even to sit down and to write your own obituary. You know, I think there's real value in deciding where you want to end up and then to arrange your life to achieve that end. For me, a new Mercedes-Benz or a penthouse or a condo in Miami, that's not really the bottom line for me. You know, even a big ranch or a big farm, that's not really quite the bottom line, I don't think. Even a nice obituary that they would read when my body is lying in a casket up here in front might be nice, but there's something else that's much more of the bottom line for me, I think. 2 Corinthians 5:10, "For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that every man may receive the things done in his body according to that he hath done, whether it be good or bad." Matthew 25, "When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory. And before him shall be gathered all the nations, and he shall separate them one from the other, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, Come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Then shall he also say unto them on the left hand, Depart from me, ye cursed into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels." Matthew 7, I think it is 12 through 15, if I have it, have the passage connected right, talks about the two ways, the broad way and the narrow way. You know, sometimes I've wished there'd be another way that wouldn't be quite so radical. Paul was talking about something a little along this line in Sunday school this morning. But sometimes there are only two options. And I don't think he was referring directly to this, but there's the broad way and there's the narrow way. For me, the bottom line is Christ's words when we face him sometime. When time has yielded to eternity, the words I'm looking for is, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant, enter thou into the joy of the Lord." If for me that is the bottom line, and then we start from that way and work backward to see how that applies to our life. Are you with me? You understand? Okay. One of the heroes of the New Testament is the Apostle Paul. We call him now, but he started out as Saul of Tarsus. He had that dramatic conversion experience on the road to Damascus. Remember how he came face to face when he met Jesus, how he was struck down, how that bright light left him blinded. He was on a destination. He was on a journey. Saul had a life's journey. But when he encountered the Christ of Calvary, his life did a 180 and he turned around. He turned around completely. He started supporting the things that he'd been working so hard against. Listen to his words in Philippians 3. Read several verses. It's a beautiful passage. He goes about detailing some of the things that made him so proud at one point in his life. Then he says, "I count those things but trash or but dung, that he may win Christ." He's now got a new goal. He's now got a new set of values. He's now driven by new values. Breaking in here at verse 9 in Philippians 3, he was writing this letter to the Philippian church, "and that I might be," I'll add a little, "and that I might be found in him, not having mine own righteousness, which is of the law," that righteousness, those things that had made him so proud just before that, "but that which is through the faith of Christ, the righteousness which is of God by faith, that I may know him and the power of his resurrection, the fellowship of his sufferings, being made conformable unto his death, if by any means I might attain unto the resurrection of the dead, not as though I had already attained, either were already perfect, but I follow after, if that I may apprehend that for which also I am apprehended of Christ Jesus. Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind, and reaching forth unto those things which are before, I press toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. Saul had this very exemplary religious pedigree. His credentials were impeccable. In his system, they just didn't get much better than this Saul of Tarsus. But when he encountered the Christ of Calvary, his life changed. He had a new goal. Those things that made him proud now brought him grief. These urgent lists, I think, were changed. Saul sought to destroy and confound the work of Christ. Now Paul wanted to know Christ and the power of his resurrection. Instead of inflicting suffering, Paul was now ready to endure sufferings as a true soldier of Jesus Christ. Paul found a new goal. In John 14, we have the interchange where Jesus was talking to his disciples. And it was like they had some curiousness or some didn't understand really what all was going to be happening. Given in the context, it sounds like it may have been there at the Last Supper, where Jesus started talking about going, that he's going to be leaving. He's going to be preparing mansions for them. It's like Thomas just didn't quite understand, what all are you talking about here? How does this work? Or what is the deal? What's happening here? And Jesus said plainly, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. It is only through Jesus Christ that we enter into this family of God. It is only through Jesus Christ that we have hope. It is only through Jesus Christ that we can have the proper direction for this journey of life that we're on today. Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. And for us today, that is the only way to him. Several months ago, we were in Liberia, West Africa. I referred to that in the announcement. And we were there at a church conference. There was some incredibly sad stories that were coming out of these people that had gone through the war back in the 90s, I think it was. And Judy was there with me, and these relational women will tend to talk and tell stories that us men pass right over. So it was a good opportunity to get some of those, to find out some of those stories. There were some incredibly sad stories that were coming out. There was a Louise there, and I referred to her, I think, as we gave her a report, or maybe Judy did, that had witnessed firsthand the killing of her own father. Her mother died not too long afterward, and Louise was left to care for her three younger siblings, just a child herself, I don't know, maybe 9 or 10 years old. And we had seen this Louise fairly early on at the conference, and there was something about her countenance that was disturbing. It was almost frightening, kind of haunting. Her face looked troubled and dark. It seemed like Satan had used her life experiences to leave her struggling under the weight and the bondage of those terrible memories. She sought us out. And as she was telling Judy a bunch of her story, at some point Judy asked, would you like us to pray for you? Would you like Lowell to pray for you? And she very much did. And we prayed very specifically, and it felt like a prayer, an anointed prayer, that God would give her deliverance, that God would give her freedom. I don't remember what all we prayed through Jesus Christ. And the next morning we saw her, and she testified to a beautiful, restful peace. She had struggled a lot with nightmares and with these haunting memories. She lay there in that bed with where the group of women were staying in a house. The words to the song, I Have Decided to Follow Jesus, came to her, and she just started singing that song. Could we sing that together here?
I have decided to follow Jesus. I have decided to follow Jesus. I have decided to follow Jesus. cross before me, the world behind me.
The cross before me, the world behind me. The cross before me, the world behind me. No turning back, no turning back.
Though no one joins me, I will follow. Though no one joins me, still I will follow.
Though no one joins me, still I will follow. No turning back, no turning back.
The decision to follow Jesus is paramount in this journey of our life. It's a decision with eternal implications for us. New goals, new destination, new friends, new heroes. On this journey, it's important that we've all faced the question, what will we do with Jesus? Have we, like Saul, decided to follow Jesus? Have we, like Luis there in Liberia, decided to follow Jesus? In this journey of life, it takes diligence to stay on track. In this life, there are many distractions. There's many weights, many things that can that are clamoring for our attention. To be a successful runner in a physical race requires discipline. There's a tremendous amount of training that goes into a successful athlete. How many of you are familiar with the name Usain Bolt? Okay. Who is he, quickly?
Fastest man in the world.
Does he currently still hold the world record in both the 100-meter and the 200-meter dash? I think he does. Someone back there is nodding their head. Well, I don't hold you in any less esteem if you don't recognize the name. That may even be an advantage. But how many of you think you could outrun Usain Bolt in a 100-meter dash? No. I'm going to make a bold statement. I think I could. Okay. After all, I used to be one of the fastest runners in my class over here at El Rico Grade School. Now, to beat this Mr. Bold, I want to add just a few qualifiers here. I would want to be in optimum physical condition. It would be good if I could spend some time in training to build up my stamina. After all, 100 meters is a fairly long race for a man in his 50s. I'm afraid that training might not be quite enough, so I'd want to do a little something for Mr. Bolt as well. I'd like to put a 100-pound bag of rice on his one shoulder, 100-pound bag of rice on or beans or something on his other shoulder. Then I'd like to tie a lead rope from a stubborn donkey around his waist. And if he was weighted down like this, I think I might be able to beat him. It might still be close, I don't know, but I think I would have a chance at least. Hebrews 12, the first two verses. Wherefore, seeing all we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. You know, in the journey of life that we're on, there's a lot of distractions. There's a lot of weights. There's a lot of things that are clamoring for our attention, and many things that get in the way of our progress as we're on this journey of life. On the trip to Colorado, we were traveling with Judy's oldest brother, Tim, and his wife. They had a separate vehicle. Those of you that have traveled with other people in two separate vehicles know it can be kind of a challenge to stay synchronized, to stay together. We were traveling on the U.S. Highway 50, heading straight out west. Actually, our campground was just within maybe 5 or 10 miles of Highway 50. But it wasn't always easy for us to stay coordinated. I was leading because theoretically I knew the way and Tim's were following us. But as we got out close to Garden City, we kind of got separated a little bit, and I took the bypass up around to go around the north side of town, and Tim didn't see where I was going apparently, and headed right straight in to Garden City on the business 50. You know, we lost quite a bit of time till we got back together again. You know, in the journey of life, there's quite a few people that get lost on the business 50. In our life's journey, it's easy to lose perspective and a true life's focus when our business is not in its proper place. Financial success can become our goal. It can take the place of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. In this race, there's a lot of weights that can so easily beset us. Luke 12:16, and he spoke a parable unto them, saying, "The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully, and he thought within himself, saying, 'What shall I do, because I have no room to bestow my fruits?' And he said, 'This will I do, I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods, and I will say to my soul, Soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years, take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then who shall those things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." You know, I think that would have been a terrible realization for that man as those things were soaking in, that the things that he was banking his life on was going to be the exact thing that was going to bring him to an unkind end. How can we see when our business is taking the place of heavenly goals? Let's consider a few questions that might give us clues as to where our treasures are. What does it indicate when I waste more emotional energy worrying about commodity prices than I spend on pondering the souls of my unsaved neighbors? Or when I compromise my integrity and values to make a successful business deal? Or when my financial empire is a well-recognized and an unmistakable driving force that is behind me? Do my neighbors know me as a generous man who is careful and conscientious, a person who really cares about them, a man who treats them fairly in business dealing, a neighbor that they enjoy having for a neighbor? You know, we're finite and we're human. The things that we can see with our eyes are the things that grab our attention. The things of this life that we see can be a distraction for the most important things of life that we can't see. Someone said it like this: the most important things in life aren't really things at all. Our business can be weights that easily beset us. You know, sometimes it takes something like a death to bring those things sharply into focus again. And we realize, you know, those things that we thought were important for the next couple days really aren't that important. In the light of eternity, the pretext, the pretensions of life can be seen much more clearly for what they are. In this journey of life that we're all on this morning, let's not lose our way on the business 50. Pleasure can be a distraction. In that same passage there in Luke, and I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. I'll admit, I'm attracted to the soft things in life. Pleasures can take a wrong focus, though. Pleasures can become our focus. We tend to think that life owes us something. We like to have things nice, but those nice things can distract us from the things that are really important, those nice things that we see. When we obsess on our own pleasures, we tend to neglect the needs of those around us because our pleasure is so important. Focusing on the least of these, my brethren, can help us take our selfish focus off of our own selves. Our lust for pleasure can distract from the most important things in life. It can jettison, it can jeopardize that journey of life that we're all on this morning. To run well, we need self-control. 1 Corinthians 9:24-27, know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize. So run that ye may obtain, and every man that striveth for the mastery is tempered in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air, but I keep under my body and bring it unto subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. In the course of life, we need to live by the rules. We need to play by the rules. To be a good athlete requires discipline, training. There's not just a lot of shortcuts to being a prize athlete. Some athletes have attempted with illegal performance-enhancing substances to improve their chances. When a person like that is found out, it's pretty brutal what happened. They were just talking about Mr. Landis, the biker, in our Sunday school class this morning. In this race of life, let's live under the Spirit's control and let Him bring about the beautiful fruits of righteousness in our lives. I'd like to relate a little story. It's not a story that I'm particularly proud of. It involves myself, but be fine here. It's not the one where I come out as the hero, so everything's good here. So when we were back in Nicaragua, I think the village was San Zapote Uno. Back in quite a ways in this dry country of Nicaragua, there was a kind of a mountain place there. I had a good friend. His name was Antonio Gonzalez. And part of our work, we were monitoring agricultural projects, and they raised beans to have dry edible beans. And so it was a significant, it wasn't too much unlike the things that we face as farmers here in Kansas. Is there going to be enough rain? Are the things going to come at the right time? Is there going to be things that will fight against the crop? Plagas, what do you say? Pests, yeah, if there's going to be pests there. But anyway, so we were there on the day, I went back in on the day that they were actually thrashing their beans. They pulled the beans and then they came out, and it wasn't like they came, you know, cruising in there with a 30-foot combine. Would have been a major, wouldn't have been that easy to just get a wheelbarrow back to that village probably, but I guess it probably could have been done because horses went. But their thrashing involved flailing sticks, and they would be flailing down on this, on these dry beans that were there in the husks and in the straw, the bean straw. And when they got that thrashing done, they'd do some winnowing. I don't know, I think they maybe did some of the winnowing there in the field, maybe some of it back home, I don't know. But they had these big bags, the bags that were about 100 pounds each, and they would put the beans in the bag. And in a good year, you know, you might get 3, 4, 5, maybe up to 10 or 15 bags off of a couple acre patch. And a significant amount of their livelihood depended on them being able to get a good harvest. But anyway, I was there, and I was kind of the cool missionary guy, you know. And they were ready to go back to the village. And they had these bags of beans to take back to the village. And so, sure, why don't I take one? I can take one here, you know. Got the thing hoisted up on my shoulder. Jing, 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 jing. It's often pretty hot in Nicaragua. There were some things I started noticing. This bag was getting heavy. At some point, I moved it over to my other shoulder, I think. And, boy, this village was quite a ways off from the field. This just wasn't going very well. I stopped and rested. I think I don't even remember how the story turned out. I think they were kind of watching this guy. I don't know. And eventually someone, I think, came to my rescue and helped me. It wasn't a proud moment for the missionary. I just had something that I was really not dealing too well with, something that I was carrying. You know, in our journey of life, we're often loaded down with things that can be a burden. They can be a distraction for us in our journey. We face real issues. Sometimes they're hard issues. I talked just previously about business can be a distraction. Well, it can also be a distraction when you just don't have money to pay your bills. That can be a problem. Sometimes I think that in general, here in middle-class America, in middle America, we have so many advantages, we don't maybe have to exercise much faith. I don't know how it would be if I would be living in Monrovia, Liberia, and just not quite sure if we're going to have enough food to keep feeding the family with the job situation like it is and the extreme fear on the streets. Perhaps our bag of beans can be some intense emotional pain. Perhaps a family member has made some unwise decisions that leave you hurt and reeling. Perhaps someone close to you has turned their back on you. You know, those burdens can weigh us down. They can nearly suffocate us. How do we lay aside those weights that so easily beset us? You know, there's a passage in 1 Peter 5 that I have long appreciated. Verse 6 starts in, "Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time." But especially verse 7, "Casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you." You know, there's burdens that we have that are too heavy for us to carry. It took a certain degree of humility to admit, and I'm not sure if I admitted it or if they admitted it for me, that I needed help with those beans there in Nicaragua. Peter tells us to humble ourselves under God's mighty hand. I think as we do that, we realize we can't make it. It's not about me. It's not about this guy that's strong enough to face anything. But we need to be able to learn to cast our cares upon the Lord, for he cares for us. I like that mental word picture even. When we're facing something difficult, "Jesus, I can't take this. I want to pass this off to you. The one whose yoke is easy and his burden is light. The one who is able to present us faultless before his throne on that great day." Let's be willing to admit it when we need help. And let's be willing to cast those cares over on his broad shoulders. First Timothy 4:12, "Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, and purity." Timothy was apparently a fairly young man. We're just studying the letters to Timothy in our Sunday school classes, and it's beautiful to see how Paul, this seasoned old man, is there trying to encourage this young Timothy. One of our goals when we go to Colorado, we often like to do some fishing. Now, I'm not a real fisherman. It's not in my blood. It's not a major part of my life. But when we're away from home, I like to, in that kind of a situation, go fishing. So we usually buy a day or two of license and do some fishing. Once before, when we were at this place, we've gone back now two different times since then, they must have just stocked the lake. And, oh, we could go out there and we could fish. We'd cast the line in. The fish were hungry. We pulled them in. We'd get our limit. We could go do something else. This time out, the fishing didn't go too well for me. My experience was more consistent than it was encouraging. Our group caught a few fish, but for myself, I was 12 fish shy of catching an even dozen. We knew there were fish in the lake. The water was clear enough that we could actually see the fish swimming around in the water. In the evening, we could see a lot of fish jumping, coming out to get insects. I guess that's what they were doing. Maybe they were just happy. I don't know. We tried different bait to entice the fish. We used big, juicy night crawlers. There was a power bait that people were using. Some of them were catching on the power bait, so we dutifully got power bait in a couple of bright colors. Someone was using mosquito flies, so we tried mosquito flies. We tried different things, but we had little success. The water was clear enough that we could actually watch those fish that were close to us. And you could watch those fish as they came up to our line or maybe even to our bait. It was like they noticed it. And I don't know, did the bright colors of that power bait fascinate them? I'm not sure. Some would come close enough that they could even bump the bait a little bit. But very few just grabbed a hold and chomped down. It was like they were a little intrigued, but they weren't really going to fall for it. You know, I pondered on those fish for a while. I don't think that fish talk. I don't really know that much about it. But if they could converse, I can imagine an older fish talking something a little like this to a younger one. "Now, don't you fall for anything that is hanging from a string. Don't go for the bright colors. If something smells out of this world good, it probably will take you right out of your world for good. If you are in doubt, just check and see if there's one of those two-legged creatures standing on the bank with a long stick in his hand, and see if from that stick there isn't a string that's coming down that's fastened to that bait that you're looking at right here. Worms, if you see that man, don't hang around. Don't hang around. He does not have your good in mind. Worms, bright-colored food, they usually have a barb sticking inside them somewhere. Those two-legged creatures are no good. They're trying to deceive you. You know, it's true that some of the food that they're offering may be very nutritious. It may be attractive, but don't fall for it. It just isn't the bother to fall for something that takes you right out of the lake. Now, something else to watch for is those wonderful bugs that are dancing on the surface of the lake. Some of those aren't really bugs at all. They're just a barbed hook with a fancy fur jacket on. When in doubt, leave it out. Once those two-legged creatures have you, it is almost impossible to get away. The few relatives of ours who did get away spoke of some terrible fear and mistreatment until they finally escaped. Many brash young fish haven't ever been heard of again. They've disappeared. Son, be careful. You know, as I pondered those fish in O'Haver Lake, I mused on the parallels in our life and the things we face from the enemy of our souls. I don't think that the devil is really that picky with what kind of bait that he uses to try to distract us. It can even be something that isn't bad in and of itself. The Apostle Paul said he was willing to lay things aside that his conscience would have allowed to keep from being a stumbling block to someone else. Or it can be something that is blatantly wrong, something that is an affront to a holy God. It seems Satan's bait is tailor-made for the fish he's after. We were wanting to fish trout. We got bait that was supposed to work for trout. You know, older people may face feelings of worthlessness, discouragement. Middle-aged people may be drawn by the attraction of wealth and ease. The young man can be tempted with power, the feeling of power and taking advantage. For young ladies, maybe it's the vain things of life. In the seven seas or out in the ocean, fish often swim in schools. In our people schools and people youth groups, our people fish often swim in schools. You know, many young people lose their way in life as they swim in the schools. The other night, Sunday evening, we were at Joe Yoder's, some of us, and there was a beautiful, I guess it was 2 weeks ago now, is that right? No, 1 week ago, I think. There was a beautiful full moon. I think they called it a super moon. And it was so bright and so beautiful. Jesus said that he is the light of the world, and he says that ye are the light of the world. That moon didn't have light of itself, but that moon simply reflected the light that it got from the source of light. And I think that is the way that we can be the lights of the world. We can be image bearers. We can be people that show light to the people around us. You know, I would like for you three young people here this morning to take a lesson from the fish in O'Haver Lake. The devil offers many dainties, many bright colored things that are attractive. But if you can be like those fish, maybe glance at it as you swim by, but not about to fall for that hook. That's a tremendous challenge for you today. The fast fish crowd may cast some disdain your way, but in the end, doing things God's way will have its reward. Be a godly example. Let no man look down on you because you're holding the torch high, even when you're young. the end of the journey. Back in Philippians, we should keep the big picture. Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth into those things which are before, I press toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. You know, we often get weary in our journeys. Fatigue sets in. Weariness threatens to overtake us. When I'm driving, sometimes the urge to sleep just really comes on strong. I've learned sometimes it just pays to pull off under a shade tree. And maybe for 5 or 10 minutes, just doze a little, and that usually gets me energized and going. How should we respond? Others, there's life's difficulties can leave a person reeling. A person can be really facing a lot of hard things in life. People can be introspective. They're focusing on their own problems. Molehills become mountains. Stepping stones become stumbling blocks. The dark clouds of today blot out any hope of bright sunshine of tomorrow. You know, there's a sense, I think, that our outlook on life can be self-fulfilling. If we always concentrate on the gloom and doom of life, that's very possibly what we will experience. And if we are concentrating on the good and the noble things of life, God can make that even possible for that to be our experience. What is the difference between people who are overcome with their circumstances and people who are energized by their circumstances? I think it boils down to perspective. Keep the big picture. Look ahead. This isn't the end of it. Someday, somewhere, it will all be worth it. Paul, Romans 8, verse 18, "For I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us." Look ahead. Keep the big picture. To reach the goal, live with no regrets. Paul talked about some of the real deprivations and hardships he faced. The beatings, I think, 5 times with 39 stripes. The shipwrecks, the perils, the journeys. He had an awful lot of difficulties. But here in 2 Timothy, he's writing, it's coming up soon in our Sunday school lesson, "I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them that love his appearing." Paul, maybe a bit of a tottering, a tired, maybe a little melancholy at that point, but realizing, you know what, it's going to be worth it all someday. As we're on this journey of life, keep the big picture. If we're facing disappointments and discouragements today, keep the big picture. To reach the goal, invest wisely. Jesus talked about having our treasures ahead in heaven. There's a sense, I think, that our hearts follow our treasures. If we invest in heaven, I think our hearts will follow that. And if we invest in temporal values, our hearts will follow that, I think. And the implications for that are fairly serious. I'm running out of time. I want to keep moving here. Be clear in where you stand. How many of you know what a chameleon is? What's the feature of the chameleon?
Changes colors.
Changes colors. I think there's actually a whole bunch of different kinds of chameleons, but many of them are able to change colors. You know, wouldn't that be kind of cool if we could change colors sometimes? Think of it, if you'd be late for class, you just glide in, and you were blending with the furniture, and the teacher never saw you. Anthony and Joey, if you're going bird watching, and you could just look like a tree or a branch or the color as you come in there. Did you know there's human chameleons? People who blend perfectly into their surroundings. They don't really change colors, but they blend in quite well with what's around them. When they're with the good crowd, they're wonderful and holy. When they're with the wild crowd, they tend to blend in with those as well. You know, this can be especially prevalent for young people and their parents sometimes. We call this phenomenon peer pressure, and we're all affected by it to some extent. Someone said that if we don't stand for anything, we'll fall for everything. I think there's some truth in that. the three Hebrew children, they were able to stand as they stood together. Tremendous example. There's three of you here today. You're taking a stand together. Paul made a bold declaration in Romans 1:16. For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ. It is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth. And it goes on there. To reach the goal of your journey in life, be clear where you're standing. Be unapologetic. Be willing to take a stand. I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation. Joshua, that great leader of God's people years ago, in that great convocation, choose ye this day whom ye will serve, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Stand unashamedly and unapologetically on with God. Be clear where you're standing. Today, you young people are giving public testimony to your allegiance, to your taking that stand. You're announcing to the audience and to the world that you have decided to follow Jesus. Now, the Bible has many examples of people who are willing to take a stand. I think of Daniel. I think of Queen Esther. I think of David. I think of Joseph. Joseph was shamefully treated by his brothers, sold as a common slave, far from home, faced tremendous stress and temptation. In the face of this extreme injustice, he responded nobly. Joseph, our son, we chose your name from that godly example. In a cruel twist of fate, this Joseph of old found himself in prison. But God was even there with him. May this life, his life, be a constant inspiration to us all. Be clear where you stand. Today, Joseph, Anthony, Heidi, you're sealing your commitment with a public ceremony. Baptism is that ceremony that symbolizes union with Christ's body, the church. It typifies the washing away of your past sins. It's an outward ceremony pointing to an inner spiritual reality. Baptism provides a tangible reference point for you and for all of this cloud of witnesses that's here this morning, that you've in fact embarked on a new journey with a new destination. May God bless you each as you formalize that step today here publicly. And may God bless each one of us as we've contemplated our life's journey here together this morning. Let's bow our heads for prayer. Dear God, we thank you for your presence with us here this morning. We thank you for the thoughts we can get from your word, the inspirations. Dear God, I just realize that we're all on a journey, that it's very important, the decisions we make, that this journey will have the outcome that we want when time has yielded to eternity. Just bless in a special way these three young people for your glory. In Jesus' name.